It's time for Good Health, an opportunity to hear from our local healthcare community about the most current medical topics and how they relate to your healthy lifestyle. Good Health is brought to you by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. Now let's welcome our host, Nick Bayerano.
Good morning and welcome to Good Health. This is Nick Bayerano, and this show is sponsored by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. And joining me today in the studio is Dr. Lena Castillo, pediatrician and pediatric gastroenterologist and hepatologist. So welcome to the show, Dr. Castillo.
Hi, thank you.
So Dr. Castillo is joining us from her fellowship program, correct?
Yes.
And you had just been in Omaha, Nebraska. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what your fellowship was in?
Well, my fellowship was amazing. It was amazing 3 years learning. During that time, I had the opportunity to see multiple different patients and make me grow as a professional. And I'm so glad that I did it. And now I'm glad to be here.
Oh, great. So you were in Omaha, Nebraska before you came here. So what do you think of Hermiston?
I love Hermiston. The weather here is much, much better than Nebraska, for
All
sure.
Right.
Omaha is a nice city. But Hermiston is more what I was looking for, like a small community that I can help. So I think here I can do some difference.
So you're a pediatric gastroenterologist and hepatologist, and you are the only one in the region outside of Portland and Seattle. That's a huge territory. So you can care for kids in from Tri-Cities, from Hermiston, from Pendleton to way eastern Oregon. So what kind of conditions do you actually take care of as a gastroenterologist for kids?
Well, first of all, I'm really excited about that. And conditions that I can treat, well, since reflux to abdominal pain, any kind of abdominal pain, I can, that's like the simple ones, constipation. I can go to conditions more severe or more serious, like Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, liver disease, could be from infections to autoimmune hepatitis. I was trained in a place that they have liver transplant and a small bowel transplant, so I'm pretty comfortable with short bowel syndromes and following transplant. So basically anything that is related to the GI, gastrointestinal system, I mean from the mouth to the anus, including liver and pancreas.
Wow. So that is a huge area, but it's in kids, obviously, it's smaller than it is in adults. So I guess my question for you then is how young and how old do you actually take care of?
From 0 to 18, 19 years old.
Wow. So newborns, you could actually take care of their GI challenges?
Okay. Yes.
And what would you do for a baby if they had a GI challenge? Do you still use a scope?
Yes. If it's needed, yes.
Okay.
It's not common to have newborns needing to be scoped, but if it's needed, yes, I feel comfortable doing it. The same way with any age. I was training in that way, and I'm very comfortable. But always that is needed. I will never do something that is not needed.
Yeah. So one of the other things that you also do is you also see regular pediatric patients as well. And you see both boys and girls?
Yes, boys
up
and girls.
Up to age?
18.
Up to age 18. Okay. So another question I would have for you then is how do you get your patients? Do they just call into the office there and they're able to schedule with you, or do you guys work kind of as a team and whoever has an opening gets the patient? How does that work?
Well, if they call and they don't have a preference and the pediatrician, they can get the first one who is available. But if they have a preference with me, they just need to say my name and find a spot.
Okay. So, Dr. Castillo, I noticed that you have a little bit of an accent, too.
Yeah.
So, are you bilingual?
I am. I speak Spanish and English.
Spanish and English, which is great for our community because we have a lot of Spanish-speaking people in our community. So that is really awesome that you can do that. So as far as your training goes, you mentioned that you trained in Omaha for your fellowship and residency program for GI. And you also trained in Miami as well.
Yep.
So is that where you actually became a pediatrician, was in Miami? Or?
Yes, I did my pediatrics in Miami Children's Hospital.
Okay. And how long were you there?
Well, I was for the residency 3 years, but before that I was living there for 2 years, so 5 years total.
All right. And what was that experience like in Miami? You know, obviously you have a lot more conditions probably there and can see a lot more kids than what your things that you, than you will probably see here. Is that true, or does it kind of transcend all areas?
I think you can see the conditions wherever you go.
Okay.
The thing is, you need to be able to see them.
Mm-hmm.
The same conditions are in everywhere that you go. The problem is you need to know how to recognize those.
Okay.
And here, probable, yes, the population is less than Miami, but Miami has a lot of people who can do what I do. And here, there is not that possibility. So actually, I think here will help more that I will be able to help in Miami. I like Miami, but that doesn't mean that I want to live there.
Sure. That's great. So I really like that your comment there is you really feel like you can help people more here than you can there. And obviously with the training that you've received in GI and hepatology, you can definitely help a lot more kids out here in Eastern Oregon. So as far as hepatology goes, could you explain a little bit about what that is and what that means? So people, because I'm not sure everybody mm-hmm. understands what hepatology actually is.
Hepatologists is the sign who take care of the conditions that affect the liver.
Okay.
And part of the gallbladder. So hepatologists basically follow any conditions that is making the liver sick.
Okay.
So our goal as a hepatologist is to find a diagnosis and treat it as possible. And if it's not possible to be treated here because resources, at least to find the best way or the best approach for the patient.
Well, you're listening to Good Health, sponsored by Good Shepherd Healthcare System on KOHU. And joining me today in the studio is Dr. Lena Castillo, pediatrician and pediatric gastroenterologist and hepatologist. And we've just been talking a little bit about what her specialty is as far as hepatology is concerned, and she's been sharing a little bit about that. If you have any questions, please give us a call at 541-567-6500, and we'll try to get your questions on the air so that way you can learn from the expert here as far as what she can do to help your children. So what are some common conditions that hepatologists actually treat? Because you mentioned the liver and the gallbladder, but for those listening at home that might still be mm-hmm. questioning, well, okay, you handle issues of the liver and the gallbladder, but what kind of conditions are pretty common that people might know about?
Well, the most common conditions are disease related to obesity.
Okay.
Kids who are, adults too, but kids who are obese, they can have inflammation on the liver. That is called NASH, or non-alcoholic steatohepatosis. And basically, our goal is try to improve the health of the liver.
Okay.
With weight management at the beginning. Or also, there is other conditions like autoimmune hepatitis. Anything that can inflame the liver or can make sick the liver, I can okay. handle those.
Okay. So hepatitis is something that is pretty not necessarily common, but something that people have heard about. So how would you actually treat hepatitis?
Well, depends on the cause. Hepatitis not always is an infection. It's not always a viral infection like people believe.
Okay.
Hepatitis can be is anything that can affect the liver, anything that can inflame the liver. Itis is mean inflammation. So anything that can inflame the liver is a hepatitis. So it could be if in our immune disease, there is medication that we can use for that. If there is infections, we also can treat that. So it's infections, autoimmune, or obesity okay. can affect the liver and produce inflammation. Disease like Wilson disease or celiac disease can inflame the liver. Drugs, medications also can affect the liver. So basically, it's to find out what is the etiology, the cause, and try to fix it.
Okay. So you mentioned Wilson's disease.
Yes.
So what is that condition?
Well, Wilson's disease is a lack of the, it's an increased storage of copper. in the liver. It's a genetic condition. It's a gene associated. Mm. And doesn't give you any signs at the beginning of life. They start having the signs. The most common is teenagers. They can start having actually some mental problems or problems in the school. And when we check the liver, it's not a common condition. It's not common. But once we check the liver and it's elevated, the liver enzymes, we look for some signs and symptoms and labs work. Mm. And if that's the result, the main treatment is chelation. And then if it doesn't work, sometimes any liver transplant.
Wow.
But it's not common.
Okay. And you mentioned also celiac disease.
Yeah, celiac disease is gluten intolerance.
Okay.
Basically, so it's not like you eat gluten and doesn't make you feel right. It's our immune disease. Basically, you also have a gene that make you predisposed to have inflammation in the intestine, and also can be in the liver associated to gluten. Mm. It's an autoimmune disease. It's different to allergy. It's not an allergy. It's an intolerance.
Okay. So as far as some of the other conditions that you would treat with a scope, let's say if I was a teenager and I had really bad heartburn, essentially, how would you care for that condition?
Well, first I need to know exactly if there is any other symptoms associated. But saying that it's just heartburn, we can check first that doesn't have any other organic conditions associated, like H. pylori infection or the same celiac disease or thyroid problems. See, everything come back normal. It's just gastritis. We can treat it with medications like omeprazole or esomeprazole for the next 3 weeks. If they respond, that's great. We continue with the medication until the inflammation in the stomach resolves. But if the patient doesn't get better, most of the time they need a scope. Okay. They need to get endoscopy to make sure there is no ulcers or inflammation, so there is no anything that is not getting better with this medication.
Okay. So if you were to end up scoping somebody and find that there was an ulcer, mm-hmm. how would you actually treat the ulcer?
Depending how deep is the ulcer. If the ulcer is bleeding, I can cauterize in the moment. I can control the bleeding if it's bleeding. If it's not bleeding, he will need longer time with his medication. But also at the same time, we take biopsies. And those biopsies can give us more answers, like if there is an H. pylori infection mm-hmm. that is causing this ulcer, or there is Crohn's disease, or, I mean, stomach will be only Crohn's disease. Ulcerative colitis doesn't affect the stomach.
Okay.
So it depends what I find and the reason of that ulcer.
Okay. Interesting. So let's talk about, I guess, the other end. So if I'm a teenager and I'm experiencing blood in my stool, mm-hmm. how would you care for that condition like that?
Well, after getting a very good history and know exactly that it's just blood in the stool, likely he's going to, and he doesn't have anemia, likely he's going to need a colonoscopy. So colonoscopy will look inside the colon, mm-hmm. a very small part of the small bowel, the end of the small bowel. And basically, we are going to look if there is any ulcers or there is polyps. Sometimes polyps can make you bleed. Or there is any malformation in the arteriovenous system that can cause the bleeding. There is another condition that I cannot see in the scope that is called Meckel's disease. Mm. But that's a scan that is the only way to make the diagnosis. But that's a scan that is done even before.
Okay. What kind of a scan would you do for that?
It's a Meckel scan. The name is Meckel
scan.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. So if you were able to treat those conditions, would it be similar to what you mentioned as far as endoscopy? Would you be able to cauterize some of those?
If there is an active bleeding, yes. I can cauterize or I can clip, that is clips, or adrenaline, injections of adrenaline.
Oh, interesting.
Most of the time, I try to do two techniques at the same time. The risk for re-bleeding, decrease when you do two techniques at the same time.
Interesting. Okay. Well, you're listening to Good Health on KOHU, sponsored by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. And joining me in the studio today is Dr. Lena Castillo, pediatrician and pediatric gastroenterologist and hepatologist. If you have any questions, give us a call at 541-567-6500. And we've just been talking a little bit about some endoscopy procedures and colonoscopy procedures that Dr. Castillo uses to treat different conditions that we've discussed a little bit here. But I want to go back and just talk about pediatrics in general a little bit here. So what made you decide to become a pediatrician?
Well, when I decided to be a doctor, the reason was because I want to do something that change, that make a difference in the world. And what is a better way to make a difference in the world than taking care of kids? Kids are the future, are the only way or the best way that we have to make a difference. If we make kids healthier and happy, for sure our world is going to be better. So that's the reason why I decided to be a pediatrician.
Wow, that's pretty noble. I know from our own discussions and talking too that you're not opposed to giving kids career advice either if they ask you. So you're pretty astute at helping them to decide, you know, maybe giving them advice.
All the time. I take the opportunity every time that I have a patient to tell them that doesn't matter what they want to do, but the important is they need to do it right and never harm anybody. That's the only thing that you need to follow in your life. And it's to be in an exam room when I see, especially a well child that I have more time to talk, is a great opportunity to let them know and that they can be good and they can make a difference.
Well, that seems pretty noble of you to do that. And, you know, your reasoning for becoming a pediatrician, that's pretty amazing that you would devote your life to kids. Obviously, I believe that too. The kids obviously are our future, and the advice that we give them and how we train them and raise them will help shape our culture and our society and our nation for the future. And by you giving them, you know, proper guidance and sharing your wisdom with them, I think that's pretty exciting. Mm-hmm. So, when you're taking care of kids, what can a parent expect from your care?
Well, they can expect the best from me. I always will try to do my best for their kids. I just want the parents know that I am there for them too. And I understand how difficult can be raising a kid. And I want them to let them know that they are not alone. If they need me, they always can contact me and call me. Kids are toys without instructions. Sometimes parents, they just know, and it's right not to know. Yeah. And if they have questions, they always can talk to me.
Yeah. Awesome. So as far as pediatrics goes, what are some conditions that you take care of that are pretty common in pediatrics?
Well, in pediatrics, from well childs to any condition, I can treat respiratory infections, asthma, abdominal pain, like I said before, diarrhea, rash, any conditions that a pediatric patient can present.
Okay. And you had talked a little bit about some other conditions that are more mental health related too that you also help with as well, right?
Yeah. Are you talking about ADHD?
Or yeah, ADHD.
Autism.
Autism.
Yeah, I can try to handle those conditions. Of course, if at some point I feel that they are getting outside my scope, I will get the best help needed. I think as a pediatrician is not to try to resolve the problem in the moment, it's try to get the tools and the guides for the moms, for the parents, for the best for the patients.
Okay.
I will never have all the answers in the moment, but I will try my best to find the best answer.
Great.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you are presented with a child that has maybe ADHD, how do you go about like diagnosing that? If it's a suspected, I guess, ADHD, are there tests that you do to help diagnose that properly?
There is questions, there is tests that we can run. Also the teachers. There is a test that teachers in the school, they do, and we can screen those patients and get it treated.
Okay. I recently read a statistic about that, and I guess that's one of the reasons I'm asking, is that over the past decade, it's increased ADHD by like 2 million kids in the United States. And I guess I was just kind of wondering how that is, how that is diagnosed, but I guess that is a great answer. You know, you kind of work collaboratively with the school system,
yes,
and with pediatricians and with other healthcare providers, probably childhood psychologists and mm-hmm. psychiatrists, I'm sure.
Yep.
Okay. So what other conditions are less common that you would take care of as a pediatrician?
Less common? Well, there is so, pediatrics,
so many, I'm
is,
sure,
pediatric
yeah.
is so broad that, yeah, I can treat any kind of infections like meningitis, or I can treat any kind of organic conditions or dysfunction, of any problems in the family also, I can maybe talk to them and handle it. But it's so broad,
yeah.
so big, I cannot tell you.
Yeah, I guess it really is, because when you're dealing with a newborn to an 18-year-old,
yeah.
there's a huge spectrum of different conditions, I guess, and different just aspects of growth that mm-hmm. you're dealing with as well, everything from maturity to just normal development.
Yeah.
So how do you, you know, as far as an infant goes through a teenager, how do you determine if a child is developing properly or normally? Are there tests for that that you conduct?
Well, yes. Neurologically, there is a lot of milestones that kids need to be making
okay.
By months, by years. And we always follow those if they are doing it. By age, we ask the parents what they have been doing, and we kind of take the questions, we check the questions, and we check what they have been doing. And so in that way, we can intervene early if something is happening. Most of the time, the parents are the best ones to tell us what the kids is doing, and that's the best way that we can know if the kid is doing fine. But the best, they also... We follow, and I always say to my patients that the most important is the weight
okay.
for the patient. Weight and how the kid is growing is giving us a lot of answers. That's the reason why I always check growth chart before I'm going, because if the kid is not gaining weight, something is wrong. If the kid is gaining too much weight, also something is wrong. Or is not growing, something is wrong. So if a kid is growing and gaining weight, the likelihood to have something bad or chronic is less likely.
Interesting. So there's probably, like you said, there's a point, though, when there's gaining too much weight. So is that, do you measure that more in infants, or do you measure it in adolescents and teens as well?
Well, in infants, it's not, in infants, it's fine. I mean, the infant, normally, they can be a little bit chubby, and they can go, okay, when they are more than 2 years, and the BMI is getting over the 80% percentile, I start getting concerned. Because more than 2 years and being obese, like the likelihood of continue being obese is high. So at that point is when I start talking to moms, and please try to decrease the amount of juice, don't give soda, no fast food, because it's the moment to act to avoid obesity.
Okay. Or exercise, I guess, would probably be a component.
Like, be more active. I mean, kids at that age, they don't need to lose weight. They just need to continue with the same weight because they're going to grow.
Sure.
I don't want them to go in a diet. I just want them to be healthy. And when I say be active, two-year-old, we cannot put the two-year-old to play soccer.
Yeah.
But he can stop the TV, or they can stop the screen of TV and just allow them to play with other kids. So that's an exercise that they can do, for example.
So we did get a question from a caller here, and the question is, how long should kids see a pediatrician and how often?
Well, start from 0 to 18 years. At the beginning, the well child checks are more often. You do 0, 2 weeks, 2 months, 4 months, 6 months, 8 months, 9 months, then 1 year, and then 18 months, then 2 years, and then 3 years, 4 years. 6 year, and every year until 18.
Okay. Interesting. And I guess it depends too, like if you're in sports, it might be a good thing to come and get a checkup, even if you don't necessarily need one, for your sports, annual sports physicals, correct?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. And then you can help assess and determine if the child is developing properly, or, you know, if they have an injury, then you can assess that as well, and give them parents advice on how to.
And of course, they can come anytime that they have questions or concern. They don't need to wait a well child.
Okay.
to ask questions.
Great. So for those of you listening, so anywhere between 0 and 18 years of age, you can bring your kid to come and see Dr. Castillo for a pediatric visit. Something else I was wondering a little bit about is, obviously, you decided to come to the U.S. from Venezuela. Mm-hmm. Were you already a doctor when you were in Venezuela?
If I was a doctor in Venezuela, I made my med school in Venezuela, yes.
Okay, yeah.
I graduated in 2006 in Venezuela.
All right. Well, very cool. So what prompted you to make the decision to come to the U.S.?
Well, I think it was multifactorial. I love my country, but my country is not passing for a very good social and economical situation. Coming to U.S. was a way to train and be, I think here I was getting a better training than I was getting in Venezuela, and also at the same time getting a better environment for my family and a better future for them. I love U.S. I think it's an amazing country. It has been giving me a lot of opportunities, and I'm very happy to be here. I'm grateful with U.S. for sure.
Well, we're glad you're here, so we're pretty excited about the services that you have to offer to the community. I guess going back to GI, what are some uncommon conditions, I guess, that you would care for? We talked a little bit about some of, like, heartburn and other things. What are some things
uncommon
that parents might want to know about that you're able to take care of that they just maybe haven't heard of?
Well, I think uncommon conditions are the more severe one.
Okay.
So uncommon conditions like inflammatory bowel disease, like Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, are conditions that I can very well follow. I was trained on those in Omaha. And they are not common, so symptoms that you can follow in your kids to make sure that they don't have it is those kids that they don't gain weight with a chronic abdominal pain. Mm. They can have some blood in the stool. They are very vague symptoms, but basically weight is a clue. If they are not gaining weight,
okay,
it's something that we need to make sure that it's not like it's not absorbing. So what is Crohn's and ulcerative colitis? Crohn's is an autoimmune disease. Basically, your body starts attacking your body, your intestine.
Okay.
And Crohn's is from the mouth to the anus. And basically, the cells from your body start attacking and causing ulcerations and inflammation in different areas, mm-hmm. skipping lesions. And for that reason, the patients, they are not able to absorb. Mm. Absorb nutrients, absorb vitamins, and for that reason they don't gain weight. And they actually have pain on and off, cramping pain or blood in the stool, depend where it's affecting the disease. Ulcerative colitis is also an autoimmune disease, but affect only the colon.
Okay.
And also patients actually, they are maybe able to absorb because they have the intestine fine, and it's the colon the problem, but these kids present more with bloody diarrhea than Crohn's. The Crohn's is more chronic diarrhea.
Okay.
Those are not common, thank God.
Yeah, thank God, for sure. But it's a good thing that you're available to be able to care for those if parents are experiencing that with their kids. So as far as getting to be able to see you, obviously you're a general pediatrician as well. So are parents just able to call and schedule an appointment?
No, to be able to be seen as a pediatrician, yes. But as a GI, they need to get a referral first. So the best way will be to go to one of the other pediatrician or their primary doctor, any primary doctor that they have. And if they consider that it's necessary a referral for me, they will do it, basically.
Okay. Yeah, so then... for those of you listening, the best way to do that, if you're looking to schedule an appointment with Dr. Castillo, is you can actually just schedule a general pediatric appointment with her, but if it is for a GI issue that your child may be experiencing, they need to get a referral from another primary care provider, whether that's another pediatrician or a family
practice or a nurse practitioner.
Or a nurse practitioner that your child might be able to see as well.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So joining me in the studio today is Dr. Lena Castillo, and we've been talking about pediatrics and pediatric gastroenterology and hepatology. And Dr. Castillo, before we go here, I just wanted to ask you, what would you like parents to know about you or the services that you provide at the hospital?
Well, I want them to know that I will do my best for their kids. The reason why I became pediatrician is because I like it. I love them. I want them to be success. So I want the parents to know that I will do my best. Don't doubt it. If I don't know the answer, because most a lot of time we don't know everything, I will look the answer. My main point is to help.
Awesome. Well, joining me in the studio today again is Dr. Lena Castillo, pediatrician and pediatric gastroenterologist and hepatologist. And you're listening to Good Health, sponsored by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. And if you would like to schedule an appointment with Dr. Castillo for your child, anywhere from newborn to 18-year-old, please give their office a call at 541-567-3740. Again, that is 541-567-3740. Thank you, Dr. Castillo, for joining us on the show today.
Thank you, Nick.